Okay, so season three, episode two, functionality. Here we go. So I've realized as a physiologist, I've been trying to get to this concept of probabilistic ethics. What ethics would fit best with an evolutionary worldview? And I realized I'm a physiologist, so I'm biased, but I focus on function. So if artificial selection is actually an extension of natural selection, that they're both mechanisms operating for this process we call evolution. And if we know that evolution is a process of resisting entropy that requires information, then we have to ask the question that gives us the idea of codifying an ethics for our civilizations. So, this is where I get probabilistic ethics. Probabilities are best guesses, if you think about it. They're mathematics, and some of you have probably taken statistics classes at some point. And a statistics class will tell you that there's a probability of this or that occurrence or this or that event happening in a given situation or population. And we use them in science. And so science, like I said, is our best tool for sorting out the world, getting new information, revealing things about how the universe works, which is what we're trying to do. And so I want to build a more ethical civilization by saying, what's the most functional way to do that? Well, if artificial selection, which is what humans do, and every time they think and act, is how we interact with the world, we have to understand consciousness. This consciousness ultimately is how humans behave. If we're not using our consciousness, then we're subject to natural selection. Then we're only responding to our hormones or our emotions, all those things that animals have, all those neural circuits and chemicals that kick up from natural selection and drive our behaviors. Hunger and lust and all those fun things that happen. And if that's how we want to behave, then we don't have to worry about artificial selection. Then natural selection will determine. And that's one of the things about civilization is that if we're going to have a civilization, we have to have rules. We have to have rules, and the rules need to be guided by ethics if we want to have them to be consistent. And that's where we get to probabilistic ethics. So probabilistic says what rules are compatible with optimizing human life, because that's the only real ethical choice we can make. As a species, as a biological species, we don't know about afterlives. We can talk about religions. We're not going to do that right now. But the idea of a civilization, as I've said before, is based on sharing common beliefs. And if we accept that science is our main belief system, we all belong to the Church of Science, as I've talked about before, and then we got to find out what the rules are within the Church of Science. What are the ethics? And the ethics are probabilistic ethics. We take the probability, we optimize the odds in our favor. We make the best choices we can with the available information. We use knowledge whenever it's available, but we acknowledge that we're ignorant, that we're mostly hairless apes, and that we don't have complete information about how the universe works, because we don't have complete information. We have to make some stuff up. But we should minimize it. There's step one of probabilistic ethics. If we can divide the information we're operating with between belief and knowledge. Knowledge is things we can externally verify. Belief are things I only hold in my brain, just like you have them in your brain. Beliefs can't be verified by definition. They're what I believe, but I can't prove. If I could prove it, it would be knowledge. That's what people don't like about science. And that's the age-old clash with religion. Because if somebody believes something and science contradicts it, well, then what are you supposed to do about it? You have to make a choice or be schizophrenic. So if you're being schizophrenic, that's not good. That means you're operating with two sets of beliefs, and at some point they're going to contradict each other. And that's why the Church of Science is our most ethical option here. If you accept that science is the best way to figure out information and figure out the natural world. So all those other religions need to be pushed to the side so that we can maintain the Church of Science. That's what we want to do. So we've got the Church of Science working. The Church of Science says we're going to use probabilistic ethics. First step of probability is we don't know if there's a God, but we're going to take the default null hypothesis. And this is what you do in science, and you assume you're wrong in the first place, and you assume that anybody who thinks there's other there's some magical deities out there, or that the rules of the universe can change. Well, in that case, we have to base it on whatever the gods say. And that's where we've gotten into so much trouble over the years. So many conflicts go back to somebody just saying, oh, that's what I believe. And that's what they believe, so they stop thinking. They don't consider other possibilities. They can't handle a second opinion. And they default to whatever their god says. Or whatever. And that boils down to what the priests say and what the holy books say. And some of them have really good rules. And that's what we want to do, too. We want to use science, which says evolution works. So if we start from step one and say there's no God, or there's probably not a God, we don't know. But you can't prove it. I can't prove it, neither can you. So let's start with the default assumption and say there is no God. What do we do then? Then we have to make up our own rules. Then the best thing we can come up with is let's maintain our species. Ideally, if we can keep our species alive, then maybe we can figure it out. Maybe in the future we can gain more information. But keeping our species alive, obviously, is we can keep alive a subset. And I think the most ethical choice, actually, is to maintain as much of the species as possible. What biological evolution shows us via natural selection is that populations that have genetic diversity have a better chance and increased probability of surviving. And that's why space exploration is an ethical choice. Because space exploration gets our eggs out of one basket. Arguably, we're screwing up the planet some. At the very least, we're using up resources. And we know we need resources to stay alive and to build our civilizations. And so we should be an explorational species. We should explore the universe. We should get off planet. And that gives us other pockets of humanity. It ensures the continuation of our branch on the tree of life, which would be an ethical choice. So we increase the probability of human survival by doing that. What about right here on Earth? Well, we need to do things that encourage the most survival, the highest rate of survival among humans. But we don't just want any humans. Obviously, we all have biases, and we can all look around and say, we're better than those people. And that's a much more common phrase, I would bet. Probably, than the phrase that says, oh, those people are better than me. That one doesn't get mentioned nearly as often. And that becomes one of the problems in life. We've got these scales of human value, as opposed to just saying all human life is valuable. And that's the choice between democracy and capitalism. Because if you make the absolute choice between saying every life is valuable, then we're going to govern ourselves by as democratic a system as possible. We're going to let every competent human have a voice in how we're doing it because we acknowledge our ignorance, we acknowledge we might be wrong, and the more information we have, the more brains that we can access, is the most ethical choice to make in trying to make decisions. Subsequently, we should try to develop everybody to their optimal potential. The alternative is to say, no, 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 some people are more valuable than others. And that's where we go down the road of our economy and we start scaling things. We start putting a value system on those. And we do have to put a value system on things. We have to say, what's the better choice? Well, encouraging diversity, I just said. If we do that, then we can make the choice to say people are more important than profits. People are more important than money. This artificial system we have to distribute resources. And then what we should do to distribute resources is to optimize human development. So we should look at the planet and we should say, how can we distribute resources to optimize the development of humans all over the planet? And if we make that ethical choice and we say, oh, we're going to optimize the development of all humans, then it becomes a different equation. Then we say, well, we can spend money on this. We can direct resources this way. And this is where you get into the loss of freedom. And that's the problem here, because people want to say, well, I want to have to do the most things I can. And if I have more resources, I can do more things. And I agree with that. I want more resources. Everybody wants more resources. But here's the question then. How much is enough? How much are you willing to give up and allow other people to starve? Because that's really the ethical choice we have right now. We are a planetary species. We've filled up the planet. There's over 8 billion humans on it. And as much as we might like to hold on to stuff, we get troubled by the question. And it's really easy to see some of the ethical violations here when you look at media and you look at the news and they talk about people making money on things. And you think, wow, somebody's willing to pay somebody for pay entertainers, to pay sports figures, to pay actors, to pay corporations. Money that gets channeled into profits. And depending on who declares ownership, who holds ownership over certain resources, the money all funnels to them. And then we have to ask the question, is that ethical? In the light of humans starving and the planet being polluted and changing ecosystems and driving species to extinctions, other species, ethically, if variety, encouraging variety includes biodiversity of other species. It's unethical to drive other species to extinction from the perspective of science, from the Church of Science. If we're saying evolution is occurring and we acknowledge some species go extinct, but to voluntarily use our consciousness to say, I'm not going to worry about endangered species or pollution or the death of other humans is the most unethical thing you can do. That would be a sin in the Church of Science. And while at the same time, we're saying, well, in order to optimize my diversity and my development, I should have freedom. You're right. Well, what do you need freedom for? You need freedom to go out to dinner, to take a vacation, to pursue your research interests or your creativity interests. But what should that involve? Does it involve billions of dollars? Think about all the money that flows to the upper 1% of society, to the elites. Because this is what we've been doing. This is where we are historically right now. We are at a junction that I define as the colonial era, which we've been really pushing for the last 500 years. It started in Europe. It's a continuation. It's been going on for thousands of years. Different civilizations have been competing. But with the onset of modern technologies, modern weaponry, modern transportation systems, which really kicked off about 500 years ago, we really figured out sailing and navigation. We figured out weaponry to conquer other lands. And what did we do with it? Well, mostly Western Europe went out and took over most of the planet. And it peaked about a little over 100 years ago with the British Empire. The British Empire, along with other European empires, ruled the majority of the planet. Britain alone, the United Kingdom, had over a quarter of the planet and a quarter of the people under its rule. And then what happened in the 20th century? Well, all that blew up. It all blew up because people said, well, wait a minute. We're tired of having the kings. They threw out the czars in Russia. They bumped the king aside in England and enhanced parliament. They threw out the Kaiser in Germany, the emperor in the Austria-Hungarian Empire. And for the most part, we got rid of the emperor in Japan in World War II. And for the most part, we've activated these democracies. And the big counterbalance was communism. That was the Cold War that played out after we had all the hot wars of World War I and World War II. We threw out the aristocrats and the dictators. We got rid of Hitler and Mussolini. And we had this process of saying, well, wait a minute, the people are more important. And we thought, what's the best way to allow freedom? Well, you have free markets. You let people, everything determine what values. But here's the problem. When we did that, and we let democracy and capitalism compete, capitalism wins as a civilization system for efficiency. And that's functionality. That's what I'm talking about today. The functionality of civilization depends on three main variables, as I've talked about before. You gotta have a belief system, and we have a different belief systems. We don't really have a codified common belief system right now across the planet, but we do have a global economy. We do have this thing called capitalism with free market economies, and there's some regulation at different points, but it's pretty minimal. And if you can declare ownership of something, you can say, we own this, and all the profits need to flow to us. And we'll work with labor or other people as little as we can. They'll share as little as they can get away with. And the other main thing is government. What are the rules of how we interact? And that's the conflict we have today. Democracy, unfortunately, is horribly inefficient. Democracy requires people to make intelligent choices. And as I've said before, we're mostly hairless apes. We're not very intelligent. We make choices in our own benefit, and it's hard to look at the big picture, especially when you're short on resources, when you're short on power. And that's the reason to diversify, because if we want a functional democracy, we want to have the only way we can do that really is to have competent adults. That's been the argument against democracy all along. The aristocrats made it first and said, well, people need to be educated. They need to understand the choices. Because if we're going to have a civilization that persists, we have to make some investments for long term. I mean, investing in schools only makes sense if you want to have a long term society. To say, because we're born ignorant, we need to learn things, and we learn to learn how to how to do things. And so we built schools, and we invested in infrastructure. And when he said, well, we don't have to worry about sanitation, so we build wastewater management systems. We've got this power source, we've got electricity to run our devices, which enhance our ability to operate and function as a human, to increase our personal efficiencies. And so we want that power grid to work. So we do all, we've made all these choices for civilization, and some of us have it, some of us don't. And the question is how to spread it all over the planet. Because ideally, and here's what I think would be an ethical situation, if we actually had democracy whereby everybody was content in terms of their personal status, they had enough resources to raise their children, and each child could enter the economy as a functional citizen who had a chance to make a living. And then they could pursue whatever they want. That would be a better world, I think. And that would be the ethical choice here, because if everybody's functional, if then we can have a democracy. And if we don't want a democracy, what's the alternative? The alternative is to have some sort of autocracy, some sort of situation where only a subset of people get to make choices. Now, and obviously we've got adults and children. Let's not talk, let's not get confused there. Children need to be tended and taken care of until they're functional adults. So we're only talking about adults. And on average, kids make up about a quarter of any population. So if we actually had a functional world democracy, we'd have about 6 billion people voting right now. That would be a heck of an election. We can't manage 300 million here in the US very well. And a lot of people don't vote. Well, because democracy is failing here in the US, because the choices are pretty poor. Do we want an octogenarian who is clinging to power in a party that tries to emphasize diversity but does it as inefficiently as possible? Or do we want a party that promotes capitalism and just says, let the ownership class make the choices? Because that's the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats here in the US. The Republicans are really the party of capitalism, and the Democrats are the party of democracy. But democracy as a social tool is so less efficient than capitalism that unless we consciously choose it, capitalism wins by default. Whoever has the most money gets to spread the most influence. They get to buy the most commercials. They get to pay off the most judges. They get to send judges on million-dollar vacations. And they influence legal decisions that shape the system. Because our belief system right now says a lot of different things. We don't have a coherent belief system. But one side of the aisle does say, capitalism is most important. Free markets are most important. And if I have more money, I get to have a bigger say in how things operate. And that's what we have to decide ethically if that's the best way to go. because that's where we are right now in the US. We have the choice to make a choice to say, do we want to keep doing inefficient democracy and keep diversifying and trying to encourage as many people as possible to be involved in the process? Or do we just want to step back and say, nope, only a subset of people get to vote. Only some of us get to hold power. And the people who have the most money know how to do it the best. And so we're going to defer to them. We're going to let the richest people make the decisions. I don't know about you, but I've met some rich people. I've met a lot of different people, my 64 years on the planet. And as we go through, as we look around and you think about it, there's people who are smarter, people who are dumber, and there's not much of a distinction. I will say the people who have more resources have had more resources their whole life for the most part. They're the people who've had resources, got better educations, had more resources to learn things and develop their skills and learned how to invest and control the markets and take advantage of situations to optimize their resources. And I'm just saying everybody should have that fair chance, but we can't do it unless we bring everybody up to a basic level. And so we should, and all I'm saying is for capitalism, then if you vote for capitalism, then it doesn't matter, because then eventually we're going to go back to kings. If you choose to say capitalism is most important, which basically boils down to voting Republican in most cases in the U.S., then you're going to say, well, I'm going to defer authority to these people who tell me they know what's going on, to these religious leaders who tell me, oh, these are the best rules, to these economic leaders who have the most money, and the political leaders who work with those religious and economic leaders who say, we'll let our betters decide. We'll let these other people make decisions and not worry about it. Or you could say, I'd like to have a say in the process. And in order to have a say in the process, I have to accept that everybody else should have a say, because that's the only way to do it. That's the only way to justify ethically you're having a decision. Because if we say, oh, the rich people make a decision or the priests get to make the decisions, then we're abdicating our responsibility as adults and citizens. And we're just saying, let them make the choices and I'll just do what I'm told. If that's what we want, go ahead and vote Republican. If you're willing to say, no, I'd rather participate in the process of governance. I want to maintain self-governance in the United States of America, then you should vote Democratic. And I know it's sloppy, and I know it's a mess. And you might not approve of other people, but that's the deal. Either you accept that we all have a say, or eventually what we're going to have is just a few people, and we're going to go back to that aristocracy thing. And historically, that's what we've had. And it's worked to a certain extent, although I think a lot of people that we don't hear about in the history books would have said it's not the best ideal system for them. And I think right now, just excluding people from situations is not going to be the best way to go. That's all I got today.